Hey everyone, thanks for checking out our show today, Process Madness. Today we have the honor of having Diana Marquis on with us. She is the founder and chief strategist with DM Group Consulting. See, I messed that up. With DM Group Consulting. Hi, Diana. Thanks for coming on with us today.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so today we're going to get to talk about some really cool things with nonprofits and process and some other cool things that we talked about in one of our previous conversations, and I thought it would be really cool to have you on and talk with our audience, and you know, especially the ones that are nonprofits, and be able to share some of your insight and expertise that you've had over the years with our listeners. So if you can, go ahead and tell us just a little bit about yourself to get started, and then we'll go into some questions.
Thanks. So I guess we can start by saying that I have 20 years of experience fundraising in the nonprofit sector in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And about 2 years ago, I started my own consulting firm because it was just time to do that. And I wanted to share my knowledge and skill set that I have with other nonprofits and not just be working for just one. So I'm a small firm. I'm a boutique firm. And I specialize in planning and board development and education. So with the planning that I do, it just seemed like a natural fit to talk with you about processes.
Yeah, it's definitely a very interesting topic, right? I always say processes are everywhere in a business, really everywhere in our lives, to be honest. But when it comes to business especially, and I think that you have some really unique insight on when it comes to like fundraising and things like that, on the you know, maybe some of the processes or practices or procedures that people should be going through in order to make sure that they're doing this as effective as possible. So I guess let's start there with the fundraising. So when it comes to fundraising, how can nonprofits, let's say, or even individuals thinking of starting nonprofits, what is the most effective way for them to go about that?
I would say the very first thing, and unfortunately, I see a lot of nonprofits that don't do this, is take the time to plan. You know, planning is so critical because you're creating your path for the year, for the quarter. And yes, it's going to change because that's the pushback. Well, why bother to plan? It's going to change anyway. Yeah, it's going to change, but at least you know where to go back to after you've dealt with whatever that crisis is that took you off your path. But having a plan, writing it out, letting everybody know where it is, and you know, Google Docs or whatever platform people use, and then reviewing it, but coming back to it periodically. Did we meet this mark for this quarter? Did this newsletter go out on time? Is our board meeting their goals? So it's so important to have a plan to get started. And like I said earlier, that's where I see a lot of nonprofits not taking the time because there's a crisis. You know, we've got to take care of this right now. We've got to take care of this today. And yes, you do.
Yeah.
And you still have to plan.
Yeah, you know, I 100% agree with that. It's funny, like even me sometimes when I feel lost in where we're going, it's like, go back to the plan, right? Get back on track. And I think it's a really good tool to keep you aligned. What was pre-planned versus kind of doing these things in the moment that might not be the best decisions. If you go back to the plan, you can be strategic, right? So I think that's definitely great advice. So I guess let me ask this around the fundraising part of things. What do you find is the most effective, right? Because there's lots of ways to fundraise. So, you know, you can go after, you know, companies and fundraise through them, where to get their employees to donate. You can go directly to a donor, things like that. What do you find is the most effective?
Well, honestly, the most effective is to have a diverse fundraising plan and a diversity of supporters. Just recently, and I'm going to mention this really quickly, there's a report that comes out every year called Giving USA. And it's a survey of all donors across the country, who gives and who gets. And I'm not going to remember this exactly, but it was over like about $430 billion were donated to nonprofit organizations in the U.S. by individuals, companies, foundations. And the biggest slice of that, like almost 70%, excuse me, is from individuals. And nonprofits mostly say, oh, if I can just get that big grant, oh, if this big company will just, you know, support us. And yes, you want that too. But you really, if nonprofits really, really, really need to focus, because, you know, we have the research to show that the biggest part of any funding comes from, comes from individual donors. So that's where the primary focus needs to be, because they come to your events. They can include you in their wills, you know, after they've been a longtime supporter. Even family foundations, private family foundations, are run by individuals. So to have that relationship, that individual relationship with your program officer at a corporation, again, as an individual, that individual person may donate as well as getting their company to donate. Yeah. So really, you know, build your, if you think of a pyramid, the base of your pyramid are those individual donors. Those, you know, they give the smaller gift, and then you kind of go up to that apex of your major gifts, and maybe corporate sponsors or whoever that give the largest gifts. There are fewer of them, but you have a strong foundation with a broad range of individual donors.
Yeah, I definitely like that. And I guess that drives home the importance of building up those individual relationships and nurturing those relationships. So I think that's very, very valuable for anyone that's listening that may not be doing the best job at nurturing those relationships, to maybe pay more attention to that, because 70% is a big slice of pie, right? So you want to make sure that you're taking advantage of that.
Right.
So let's jump a little bit into when we're thinking about nonprofit and, you know, where we're going and where the future is of business in general, right? We just had come out of a extremely complicated year in 2020, and, you know, 2021, it seems a little better, but we're not back right. But it's required a lot of businesses to really change the way that they think about things. So I guess let's jump into a little bit about like leadership and governance and things like that. Because I know that some of the things that you work with as well, work with nonprofits to help them get those things in order. So can we talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I do want to talk about that. I do want to mention one other thing really quickly relating to this year of COVID that we've been through. And again, referring back to Giving USA, in 2020, the year that all of this, you know, was done for Giving USA, and of course, the pandemic, giving in 8 of the 10 categories that they define did not go down.
Really? Wow.
They did not go down. Yeah. So the people, I mean, the support, the donations and so forth in support of COVID research and COVID relief happened.
Yes.
And 8 of the 10 categories, again, that are tracked by Giving USA did not go down. The two that went down are, and I'm just going to remember one of them, arts and culture. And I forget what the other one was. And it's obvious that for arts and cultural organizations that depend so much on, you know, public presence and input and having those doors closed certainly did affect them.
And I think a good thing to put in there, just to kind of go on that, I mean, that being the case that it didn't go down shows probably even more how important those relationships are, because those are loyal donors that are continuing to give even in an uncertain time, right? So
exactly.
I think that's really amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. Absolutely. And that is really important. Now, I'm sorry to not answer your question right away yet, but I did want to touch very briefly on, you talked about nonprofits that are just starting or people who want to start nonprofits.
Yes.
So my first advice to someone who wants to start a nonprofit is don't do it.
Okay.
So the second piece of advice is do your homework. If you want to, you know, feed people who are homeless, for example, find out who else is doing that, because there are many organizations already doing that. Some of it have been doing it for decades, unfortunately. And go talk to them, learn from them. Maybe you can work with them. If you're still driven to create your own nonprofit to feed the homeless, then find that niche that isn't being filled by these others. And I don't know what that would be, but you know, you would find that and focus your effort there. instead of trying to duplicate. Because if you're doing something that's already being done, mm-hmm. funders, and I'm at this point, I'm thinking of foundations, for example.
Yeah.
They're going to say, we're already funding five other organizations, you know, that do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, then you can say, well, mine's different or whatever. But, you know, it's, you really have to do that homework, because if you don't, people are going to think that you don't know what you're doing and that you haven't done your homework. So that's one thing. And then the other piece of advice, say you want to go forward with your nonprofit, again, is do your homework and have everything lined up before you start filing for your EIN number or for your nonprofit status with the state. Understand what the rules and regulations are, because it's more than getting a 501c3 status. Mm-hmm. And there's like 29 different categories under 501c in the IRS code. So you need to know really where you fit. So anyway, I just wanted to touch that, because I'm guessing that your audience has, you know, a lot of passionate people who want to do something impactful, and yeah. and I mean, nonprofits is one way that people think of doing that.
And in most of the ones that we work with are typically going to be more established, but I definitely hear people saying, oh, I want to start a nonprofit, right? And I think in any business, like not just nonprofit, you really have to question, why are you starting a business, right? Like, are you starting because you want to control something, or are you starting because you want to make change? And if you're starting because you want to make change, then I think your advice is great. Of maybe there's a company that's already there that you can go and support and help, mm-hmm. and maybe even take it to the next level, mm-hmm. Versus becoming their competition in a sense. Mm-hmm. And doing your research to make sure that you may be coming into an already saturated nonprofit market, right? So, yeah, I think that's all great advice. So
yeah.
Thanks for that.
So we were going to talk a bit before I took us down another path. We're going to talk about boards, and that is something that I'm working with boards and helping them define their roles or understand their roles is something mm-hmm. I really feel very strongly about, again, because many people don't know. Yeah. You join a board, someone says, hey, come join my board. They say, sure, you know, because they're friends, it sounds like a cool project. And they have no idea what they're stepping into. And yeah. one of the main things I would say for anyone who is interested in serving on a board is like, thank you. Yes, we need your service, you know, and ask questions, you know, what is your budget? What are the expectations of a board member? You know, and an organization should be able to have basically a checklist of these are the things we expect of our board member.
Yes.
One of the things that always is, it's a stumbling block for people who, especially people who aren't wealthy and who, mm-hmm. you know, money matters, you know, in their day-to-day life is, you know, how much do you expect me to donate? And it used to be, you know, you've got to give and get, or give or get, or mm-hmm. give and get, or get off. That was like the mantra.
Yeah.
And not everybody can do that. I mean, some can do some, you know, you do something else. But now in the nonprofit world, the wording is, you know, give what is a significant gift for you.
Mm, yeah.
And you make that pledge, and there should be a meeting like with the chair of the board where you say, you know, my significant gift is this. And then there's a cumulative goal for the board, mm-hmm. you know, that they're expected to meet. Because if, you know, I can give $100 and maybe you can give $1,000. I mean, and those are both significant gifts for each of us. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the main stumbling blocks for joining a board. The other thing is that there's little board education. Mm-hmm. Again, understanding what the role is, there is a board member has a legal and a fiduciary responsibility to a board. They are responsible for the financial well-being of that organization.
Yeah.
How many times do people hear that? Not often, you know, before they are asked to join a board. So, you know, ask the questions, go on a tour, make sure you understand what they're about. Mm-hmm. And you know, that it should be a passion of yours. One of the other kind of rules of thumb in fundraising is if you join a board, that board should be one of your top three charities. The other two, assumingly, are your alma mater and your place of worship.
Mm.
So, you know, if this board isn't in that category, then maybe that's not your interest.
Yeah, that's, you know, and I have a question kind of like when it comes to like leadership and governance. I feel like now we're getting into times where nonprofits are, I believe, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, most donors are probably older in age where they're at a more mature financial level when they can give, right? Mm-hmm. But as times are changing a little bit and you're starting to get now like the millennials and the Gen Zs and all these different groups that are coming in, donating and fundraising is different. I'm assuming it's changing, right? They're very much tech savvy. They're, mm-hmm. they're doing most of things on mobile apps and mobile phones, email, things like that. What do you have any tips or do you have any insight on how nonprofits that may be used to fundraising one way need to start pivoting to think 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line for their donors?
Well, 5 and 10 years down the line is now.
Yeah, right. that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Because again, I think there is something, I might be a little bit wrong in this, but there's something like, right now in our marketplace, there's like four generations that are in the workforce, maybe five. No, I think there's like four generations, you know, that you look at who are in the workforce. So that's pretty diverse in that regard.
Yeah.
And serving on a board, many nonprofits are realizing that they need, well, diversity, of course, that's the, you know, big buzzword, diversity, inclusion, access, equity, all of that. And I'm, you know, sad to say that many boards are still struggling with that part. Mm-hmm. One of the tactics that has been used with some of the boards that I've been involved with as a volunteer or working with them as a consultant is to, in order to attract younger donors and younger board members, is to have a young professionals group. Mm. You know, so there are these different affinity groups.
Yeah.
So that's one way. And you can have an affinity group and not be a board member. It can serve as a stepping stone, if you will, to board service. If you're not ready to take on the responsibility of serving on a board, you can be a volunteer for this affinity group. Mm. The other thing about fundraising that I wanted to mention, because most people don't think about it, again, you've got four generations in the workforce, four generations of people donating, and people donate in different ways, which I think is the point that you want to get to.
Yes.
Okay, believe it or not, and I know you're probably not going to believe me, but you can research it, is direct mail, mm-hmm. like U.S. Postal Mail.
Got it.
With an envelope
where
you write a check and send it back, is still raises the most money.
Really? Well, yes. You know, this is what I'll say. At least from the research that I've known, like I said, typically the older generations are doing a lot of donating, and I can understand that being probably the most comfortable way, the way they've ever been doing for years, mm-hmm. is that route. So I definitely can understand that. And I would think that the younger generations may not yet be to that financial maturity to where they are willing to make any decent sized donations. But as we talked about 5, 10 years being now, that is obviously going to start to change where they're now becoming that group of people, but where you're going to meet them. Like, you know, for me, for example, I'm in my mid-30s and I rarely look through paper mail, rarely ever, you know what I mean? So everything is typically digital.
Mm-hmm.
For me.
Mm-hmm.
And so like for me, even if I would be willing to donate, I probably would miss your message through direct mail, right?
Exactly.
So that's why, like, I would think that it is really important, really, to do both, right?
Exactly.
Because you're kind of in a transition period, but mm-hmm. where you're still, well, not when I say transition, you need to do the direct mail type stuff and the way that that's been giving you donations probably for the past 10 years. But at the same time, you're making sure that you're thinking about the next 10 years that are coming. So I was just, you know, kind of curious if that's something that you're seeing that companies need to make that transformation and start to think about their digital experience and how they're reaching those generations.
Oh, yes. So again, from Giving USA, mm-hmm. They reported that the giving, online giving,
mm-hmm.
was was increased by 13% over the previous year. Wow. So from 2019 to 2020, it increased by 13%. So definitely, and nonprofits have been, I don't know, at least the last 5 years, and I would say even a little bit longer than that, have been ramping up and refining online giving through their website, through, you know, email, whatever. Mm-hmm. The other part, of course, is through social media platforms. Mm-hmm. For example, just this morning, a friend of mine forwarded a post to me. It wasn't even his nonprofit. It was someone else's nonprofit and said, you know, please support this, blah, blah, blah. So I kind of read through it really quick. You know, they wanted $20. Well, they wanted more than that, but, you know, so I donated $20 to an organization out of state I have no connection to, but it was my friend and the mission resonated with me. Mm. So we're seeing more and more and more of that. Yeah. Where it's these smaller gifts, it's online, it's social media, it's the connection is the person you know, again, going back to those relationships.
Yeah.
So if I, and I'm just going to give you one quick example. So if I went to you, Mike, say, Michael, you know, I need to raise money to, you know, save the trees in Oak Cliff. Mm-hmm. And you can say, okay, that sounds cool. And you would share that or share whatever link I sent you. And assumingly, the Oak Cliff trees would get donations from people who don't even know where Oak Cliff is. But because you sent it, they said, okay, you know, Michael's cool. We'll trust him.
Got it.
You know, we'll do it. So there's more of that. The challenge with on the nonprofit side is capturing those first time unrelated donors.
Yes.
To send, because if the mission resonated, you know, like with me and this group out of state, you know, I might, you know, if they reach out to me again, I might donate again, you know? So that's the challenge for the nonprofit.
You know, I think that's a good point that, you know, I don't want to spend too much more time because I know we've got a couple more great questions to ask, but I do want to bring this one thing up. You know, we work a lot with companies and we work with different types of core processes. So let's talk about marketing for a second. Is the importance of understanding the customer through like segmentation through data, right? So for example, like you said, like you have someone that may donate to something because a friend shared it, but might not be because they actually care about it necessarily, but because they're supporting a friend's, let's say, what they care about. Mm-hmm. So I would think that that's something extremely important for an organization to know, because if I'm sending you messages, let's say about trees, thinking that I'm going to touch, you know, something that you care about, that may not be true, right?
True.
So when you're spending marketing dollars, you may be spending it on the wrong focus, where they may be more of, you know, you may need to figure out what they care about to see if it's relevant or not.
Oh, yes.
So that was just really interesting, because I for me personally, I've never really thought about, you know, donating just because a friend said, hey, you should donate. That's right.
Oh, you've done some.
I'm sure
I've been or something, right?
I'm sure I have, but I'm just like, I've never really thought about it being from that perspective of like, you know, but definitely, I mean, I think Facebook is a great example where Facebook for your birthday, they will allow you to pick a charity and say, you know, get your friends to fundraise with your friends, and your friends start to donate to the one that you pick, right? So that, I think that's a great option. Like, I may not even know anything about this one, but because my friend decided, hey, I want to fundraise some money for this, you do it. So that's really, really interesting. So jumping to the next thing, I know we're going to talk a little bit about how important process and procedures are to nonprofits. Huh. So let's jump into that. The show's Process Madness. So I always love to hear the madness. So let's talk a little bit about, in your experience, like maybe some of the processes and procedures that either you see that nonprofits don't have, or that some that you highly recommend that they pay attention to. Obviously, they're everywhere in a nonprofit, but what are some of the primary ones that you see that are maybe hindering growth or innovation within nonprofits?
Oh, there are so many. So, you know, and I don't want to sound like, you know, every nonprofit just doesn't know what they're doing, because many do, of course. Yeah. And at the same time, there are many who have challenges that they still need to meet. So the first step in having a procedure is you've got to have a policy. Yeah. And those policies must be approved by the board, and usually written by the board. Yeah. since I'm in the fundraising side of this, I think the most important policy, procedure, and process to have in place has to do with your gift acceptance. Some of this may sound like so much common sense, and it is, but if it's not written down and it's not communicated across the board, then it doesn't happen, as you know, dealing with processes all the time, right? There are other policies that are as important. I think there needs to be a whistleblower policy, a harassment policy. And again, those filter into other parts. But to talk just very briefly, I'll try to talk very briefly about the gift acceptance policy. And that has to do with what kinds of gifts you accept. I mean, there's more to give than cash.
Yeah.
You know, you can give, you know, nonprofits should be able to accept stock gifts or other securities. Some people want to give their art collection, you know, or their coin collection.
Yeah.
And so you need to have a policy that says, we will accept this if blah, 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 you know, and you spell that out, you know, we will accept a piece of art if you, the donor, have it appraised and you understand that we're going to sell it as soon as you give it to us.
Right.
You know, one of the things when I worked for an international organization, it was a matter of course to accept stocks and securities. And so those transactions came through me, and I had a very small window to take it through the chain of command. And those stocks, any stocks received, had to be sold within 72 hours of receipt.
Wow.
So, you know, it's like, we're not playing the stock market.
Yeah, right.
You know, so that's something that was very clearly stated to me as the person handling that, how it's handled through the system. So to have data entry procedures and processes written down and in place, because you're talking about segmenting or segmentation, to have your donors segmented is important to your fundraising. You're going to treat a $10,000 donor differently from a $100 donor. That's just kind of the fact. And you need to know who they are. And, you know, it's, what is it, garbage in, garbage out, or whatever that saying is. So you've got to have that, you know, the person handling it needs to know what the policy is and the procedure is to get that data in correctly.
So yeah, I think those are all great points. I mean, it really all comes down to process and procedure documentation, right? And not just documenting those things, but actually making them available for people to reference. Because I've seen companies where they will document, but they're like hiding them in the back file cabinet somewhere. It's like, it's like, you know, the team has no way to get it. And it really all boils down to communication. Being able to manage communication and handoffs between departments, donors, and everywhere else. But I think those are definitely great points on making sure that you document those procedures and those policies so that your team knows exactly how to do it, so that you can really get the expected outcome, right? Like if you know you want A, tell them exactly how you get A, right? Instead of letting them guess and everyone's doing it
exactly.
And so on. So yeah, I think those are definitely great points. And really in any business, anyone that's listening to this, if you have a business at all, you should be documenting your processes and referencing that documentation to make sure that you're doing it correctly.
Exactly.
And the goal of the documentation is really to maintain strategic, right? So that you can continue to do it a specific way to get a specific result. And when that documentation is no longer working, it's time to go back through it and figure out what you need to do to improve or to change. As your business changes, your documentation and your process are gonna constantly be improved and updated. I just wanted to add that 2 cents in because I think that's a great point on making sure that they document those procedures and those policies. So, well, let's go. I know we're coming up to the end of our time, so let's get this one last question out here. And one thing that I get often is, when does the improvement stop? when are you done? And I know the answer to this, but I want to ask you the answer.
There is always another phase. There's also always another step. Even when things are going as smoothly as you think possible, that's the time, also the time to say, okay, this is good. We have a breathing space here. What's happening in our sector? What's happening in the economy? Especially, you know, nonprofits really need to understand what's happening economically so that they can plan, you know, be up to date on what's happening, you know, in our world. So I think there's, you know, it doesn't stop. It always, there's always another phase. New people are going to come in and want to reexamine it. And I would also say that, you know, whether things are going, you know, well, or you're facing a lot of challenges, take the time to really examine. I mean, like, examine, you know, read it, understand it, talk about it, and make sure that these policies, you know, again, the backbone of any processes or procedures, are still what you need, because they can always be revised.
Yeah.
You know, and updated, and they should be. Yeah. They should be updated and revised. So the answer is when you stop breathing.
I like that. Yes. Basically never. But you know, what I will say is this, is that it doesn't have to feel like hard, tedious work. Right? It is literally a practice of learning about your surroundings and adjusting to them, so that you can make sure that you're staying current and staying up with the times as things are changing, right? Like, as cities change and demographics change and things change, all these things can affect your donors and things like that, or where you're doing your fundraising and those type of things. So it's extremely important, I would think, to pay attention to those things, right? For anyone that is in any business, but especially nonprofits, where, you know, you may have a city that is full of donors today, but may not be as dense later, right? So, so I definitely think knowing and seeing that before it happens is going to allow you to make the right moves to make sure that you're keeping on your mission. So
exactly.
Well, how about this? I think with that, tell us a little bit about where they can find you, like social media, your website. Tell us a little bit about that. So if anyone wants to learn about your services and how you help nonprofits, they can go online and check you out.
Thank you for that. My website, which is the easiest way to find out about me, is dmgroupconsulting.com. And there is information about the services I offer, a little bit of background on me, of course, and then how to reach out to me. The groups that are the tasks that I really try to focus on are planning. Thank you, Michael. And board governance training, and other issues that might impact your board. I'm also on LinkedIn, Diana Marquis, Marquis. I know people have trouble with that sometimes. And that's where you can find me. So thanks.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing all that with us. And I think, you know, I learned a lot. Hopefully our audience learned a lot. All of your information as far as your website and stuff, we're going to go ahead and put along with the video and the links when we share this online. So anyone that needs to get that, definitely make sure you check the description. Other than that, thanks for checking us out today on Process Madness, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks, Michael.